like the last climb ahead of where I was going to stay for the night was this pitch black like mountain, and I'm like cycling up it, and I hear like a dog bark, and then I hear another dog, and I was like, oh, they're chained up, you know, whatever. And then I hear them all around me, and I'm like, ah. And I was just like cycling as fast as I could, like, you know, up a mountain, like thinking, this is it, this is how it ends. Like, this motorcyclist passed me and he like raised his like fist in solidarity to me, like, keep going. And I was like, yeah. And I was like, that was so nice. I'm even crying, like I'm tearing up thinking about it now because I was in such a like bad way mentally. With whatever hand you're dealt in life, like, you can, you know, take steps to do something, you know, to achieve certain things within the parameters that you have.
Welcome to the Fail Forward podcast, where Dan and Adnan peel back the onion on our guest stories and on each other, all in an effort to change the narrative of failure. Enjoy the show. We met recently on LinkedIn.
Yes,
we and connected. We got talking about failure quite early on. And there was one story that you brought up to me that really kind of resonated with me about a recent event through cycling and something you got into, you know, fairly recently. Talk us through a bit about how that kind of started for you, getting into ultra cycling, and just talk us through, you know, the event and what happened.
So, yeah, I mean, oh God, where do we want to start with this? Excuse me. It's not super recent. It's 2019 and it feels like we've all had a lifetime in the past 3 years of experiences and things that have happened. But in early 2019, I entered into the world of self-supported ultra cycling. So for those who don't know, self-supported ultra cycling is cycling really, really long distances and races, all self-supported. So that means there's no support cars, there's no support team. It's anything that you can commercially get on the road that any of your fellow racers can get as well. You're available, you can take advantage of. So for me, my first race was 1,000 kilometers. It was in Oman, Biking Man Oman, in February of that year. And that was a race that, I mean, 3 months earlier, I wasn't really a cyclist. I bought my bike with less than 2 months to go before the race. I just got to the end of 2018 and, wanted to take on a big challenge. I'd always kind of been sporty and always been active, but like, I would be the first to say, like, I was always the worst in the CrossFit class. I was always like the worst, the slowest runner, like, you know, not really good at anything. I'm very uncoordinated, but I like trying a lot of things. So, I was thinking about what am I going to do? You know, what would be a good physical challenge, like an exercise or, you know, sport challenge to do. And running didn't really appeal to me. You know, I'd run like 10Ks before. I did a 13K Spartan race, like, I don't know, 6-7 years ago, that kind of thing. And cycling always seemed kind of appealing. You know, I'd rode a bike as a kid and I commuted in university riding my bike, but I never had like, you know, a proper quote unquote race bike. I'd never clipped in, you know, with shoes and, you know, had a Lycra outfit or anything like that. And then in late 2018, summer 2018, I should say, my friend Chris had come back from doing the Transcontinental, which is a 4,000 kilometer cycling race across Europe. And that was his first ultra cycling race. And he came, I think it was 16th, if I'm not mistaken. And he was just like buzzing. Like, he was so like, you know, I don't know, elated and really on a high and talking about all these experiences, you know, he was like skinny with like weird tan lines. He was like, yeah, I slept in a playground the last night. It was awesome. I was chased by dogs. And I'm like, this doesn't sound awesome, but he was super happy, you know? And, one night we were at a barbecue and I just said to Chris, like, hey, do you think I could do something like that? You know, like meaning the transcontinental. And he's like, of course you could, you know, if you train, of course you could. So I was like, okay, cool. I'm going to do that. And, I mean, to cut a long story short, I didn't get a place in the transcontinental for 2019, but along the way I started, doing the Biking Man series. So I had kind of, you know, I'm a bit of a, I don't know, I'm a bit of a procrastinator sometimes. So about, 3 months out before this race that I'd signed up for, Biking Man Oman, I was like, okay, I need to get a bike. I need to start really properly training and stuff. And I did. And I did that race in February and completed it. You know, I didn't know what was going to happen in the race at all. Like, I think 2 weeks out, I was like, I don't know if I'm going to go do this. You know, I just think, this isn't very smart. I'm not a real cyclist. Like, I'm a newbie, you know, and I was really inexperienced, you know, really. And, one of my friends, Dan, he was like, what's the harm in just going to the start line? Like, really, like what do you have to lose if you go and start cycling, like riding your bike, turning, you know, pedaling and just going? And I was like, yeah, you're right. You know, like, if it, you know, if I didn't complete it or I failed or whatever, cool, you know, just go home.
Give it a go.
Yeah, I give it a go. Like, you never know, you know? So I give it a go. But yeah, to my own surprise, like, I mean, not to my own surprise. I knew, once I was on the start line, I knew I was going to complete it. Like, whatever had to happen for me to complete it, I was going to complete it. So that was a success. Immediately, like, you know, anyone who does these ultra races knows, like, the joy in it is really the process, right? Like, you know, when the race ends, you're kind of like, oh, a bit lost. Like, what am I going to do now? So I finished and I was just like, okay, what am I going to do now? I'm going to sign up for another one. And I signed up for another one that was 2 months later in Corsica, a bit shorter, but a lot more elevation. So it was about 750 kilometers, but the elevation was, I think, like 13,000 meters. So it was very, very, very hilly. And, you know, continued to kind of train from the last race to Corsica, completed that one. It was a beautiful race. Like, honestly, I loved every second of it. I loved it. Like, just everything about Corsica is magical. You know, the race, the people who were racing with me were very, very nice. It was just, yeah, a wonderful, wonderful experience. And then I was like, I think I'd signed up for another race, Biking Man Portugal, but it couldn't, for some reason, I couldn't do that, like, with work or whatever. So I moved the transcription to Biking Man Taiwan, which was my big failure, which so was
these events,
the one I failed.
These events are called Biking Man then as well.
Yeah, so it's a series of events. Axel is the guy who organizes it. And yeah, kind of their races around the world. In terms of the ultra cycling world, they're shorter races, you know, than a lot of the other ones that are out there. Like, some of the longer ones are like 4,000 kilometers, 3,000, 4,000, that kind of thing. So Biking Man are kind of like, I don't know, I hesitate to say, but more accessible, you know, like if you wanted to get into ultra cycling or try it without kind of going for one of the big ones first. So yeah, Taiwan was my big failure. I think that's the race that you're probably talking about.
Don, what was the failure for someone who doesn't know? And if you can be as specific as possible about the failure, I want to know that.
Yeah, I mean, in short, I'll work back from what the big failure was. I'll work back how I got to fail. But I scratched in the race, so I quit. I DNF'd. I did not finish, which, you know, for someone who is a self-proclaimed perfectionist and had two amazing races early in the year, was a pretty bitter pill to swallow at the time, like, but only for a moment. So, yeah, I failed at that race. And I mean, that failure was kind of a bit, it was coming. I knew at some point, like when I started doing these races, that, you know, there's going to be a point in time where not everything goes to plan and not everything goes your way. And you will probably scratch at some point. And that just happened to be the race that I failed in. So that was November 2019.
How does that feel these years later as well? Because I could just tell by the way you explain that you didn't finish and you're a perfectionist. How does that feel now looking back, you know, a couple of years ago to know what you'd gone through and hadn't completed something? How does it?
You know, it feels fine actually with this. Like, I think it's kind of one of those things that helps me in other areas to, you know, kind of see like it's okay to fail and it's fine. Like for me, you know, and I wrote, so I'll talk you through kind of the race and how I got to the failure. I guess it started before the actual race had happened. Training wasn't really going to plan. I wasn't in a really good, I had an amazing first half of 2019. Like it was just, you know, the most magical year. And it was still like completely the one of the best years of my life that I have had. I've just met so many new people, had so many new experiences, really kind of not took a step back from work, but began to reprioritize, you know, some of the things that I had always wanted to do or probably went, or, you know, that work had kind of maybe taken up a lot of my time. So I really prioritized myself and yeah, just had a great year. And around summer, maybe I just started to not really feel well mentally at the time. And, you know, I guess compounding that, it kind of becomes a bit of a perfect storm. I started to get some migraines, which I get on occasion, and which really derailed my training for this race. You know, if anyone gets migraines, they'll know like how absolutely, I don't know, you know, hideous. Yeah, hideous and, you know, devastating. And kind of, I let myself spiral a little bit, like, you know, missing training and because of a migraine. And then that kind of, you know, compounded and I wasn't really feeling good mentally anyways. So training was very, very difficult for this particular race. And I went into it so untrained. Like I look back on photos and I'm kind of like, you know, I'm not someone, I don't really like care about weight or anything, but I did have a couple of pounds on, like, and I just looked like not, you know, my best, like not in my best form physically, like in terms of fitness wise, and not in my best, you know, mind space ahead of that race. And I remember sitting like, you know, this race was quite challenging as well. I think it was 1,150 kilometers and about 20,000 meters of climbing in it, Biking Man Taiwan. And I didn't even look at the route really before. Like I was just kind of like not there mentally, but I had this, you know, entry into the race, signed up. And I just remember sitting in the race briefing and, I don't know, something came up like about, I was talking to somebody else about brake pads or whatever on the brake. And I was like, oh, if mine gave out, it'd be a good excuse to just stop. You know, like
the self-doubt was already kicking in. And
yeah, I just wasn't in the good mental space. But again, I was just like, okay, I'm just going to.
Let's just pedal.
Try,
just,
you know, like
start.
Yeah. Yeah, who knows, you know, who knows what'll happen. And, you know, from day one, it was just difficult. It was a really difficult race. Like I look at the difference between Corsica and I just loved it. Like I loved every second of it. Like climbs where I was like, I was like, oh yay, a climb, you know? And I was like floating up. I was like, floating up the mountain, you know? I was like, yes, another climb, you know? No dogs around. Like this is great. Or any dogs that like Corsica has the most chilled out animals on the face of the planet. I saw a cat like sleeping in the middle of the road. Like any dog I saw was like totally placid and like friendly. So it was just a wonderful race. And Taiwan in contrast was, you know, it was kind of like Taiwan's beautiful, I'll say that, but it has, you know, the humidity there is quite odd. Like it was like nothing I've experienced in terms of like humidity, because it felt kind of cool, but then it was so sticky, you know. It was just like you're just really uncomfortable all the time. And you know, the race, the way it was organized, because I didn't do any research before, like the climbs were just impossible. Like you'd be cycling along and you turn a corner and you're like, this is a wall, you know, this is a wall in front of me. And I remember like, you know, and then you just have to hop off the bike. But I think most people did that, you know, most people on that race walked at some point up a climb because it was just, yeah, I've never seen anything like them. And like, I remember day one, I was just like, I was walking up this climb and I just put my head down on the handlebars like, what am I doing? What have you done? I was just like, I'm lost. I'm a lost person. Everyone is doing this race is lost. We're lost. Why? What is in us that makes us want to do this, you know? And this guy in a car, like, kind of stopped. He's like, are you okay? And I was like, yeah, yeah, I'm fine. I'm fine. You know, and I just continued to cycle. And I mean, you know, just the amount of distance you cover in a day, you're kind of like, you go through all these kind of emotions, you go through all these kind of, like, geographically you're very far from where you started and stuff, different landscapes, different people and stuff like this. And yeah, it was just difficult from the start. Like, it was, you know, my mind was telling me, like, this is wrong, everything's wrong, but then one part of my mind was like, just keep going, you know, just keep going. And that's what I did. And yeah, it was just like, even like the end of the day, like, I'd seen dogs all day and most of them were like chained up. So they'd be barking and then they'd run, but they'd be like a chain, you know? And then like the last climb ahead of where I was going to stay for the night was this pitch black, like, mountain. And I'm like cycling up it. And I hear like a dog bark. And then I hear another dog and I was like, oh, they're chained up, you know, whatever. And then I hear them all around me and I'm like, ah! Oh, no. And I was just like cycling as fast as I could, like, you know,
up a mountain,
like thinking, this is it. This is how it ends. Like, this is like, and then, yeah, this is it. It was just like, oh my God, like, what's going on? And I finally, like, and then up further, they somehow retreated. I don't know. I didn't even see them. I didn't even know what they looked like. They could have been huge dogs. They could have been, I don't know, like tiny, tiny things. I have no idea. But I just remember I've never pushed so hard. Like, my heart rate is probably like over 200 going up this mountain. And I wouldn't say I outraced them. They probably just gave up and said, she's useless, but like, she's no good. And
well, that's the worst thing, to not be able to see the dogs, because now you're just imagining the worst as you're being motivated up the mountain.
Yeah. No, it was awful. And I mean, I finally got to where I was staying. I ran into some other people who were racing as well. And, you know, after day one, I was just like, okay, I'm going to like do this. I'm committed now. You know, I'm kind of ready to, I want to see if I can finish it. And then like checkpoint one that morning, the next morning I stayed at some random place. You always stay in like the most random places, like whatever's available on booking.com. like, we had to meet this guy and then he brought us to the place. I was like, this is how like a horror movie starts. Like, you know, I'm going to be on like 48 hours mystery or something. she was in the middle of Taiwan and she disappeared. And so yeah, around the next day, like I went next morning, I reached checkpoint one and I was like, okay, yeah, I reached checkpoint one in the cutoff time. Like, it's go time. Me and my really unfit self was going to try to finish this race. And, yeah, and then the next day was like, there was no reprieve. It was just like difficult. Like, the next day I was like, the checkpoint was beautiful. It was at this place called Sun Moon Lake. There's this beautiful, like, I guess temple, maybe you'd call it, which is just phenomenal. Like, I've got the most amazing picture there because I made one of the stuff. I'm like, take it again. I'm going to get some good pictures out of this anyways. David, one of the race organizers. And yeah, just the next day again was terrible, like difficult, so difficult. I had this like 11 kilometer climb with like an 11% gradient average and I had no water. I had Pocari Sweat in my bottle, which was like soup. Ugh, you know, it was just everything was difficult. Everything like about this race. And then yeah, it just kind of carried on, you know. It's all kind of melds. I'm trying to think like where I stayed that night even. And everything was just hard. Like, nothing
just
was,
sounds like a test. It was all a test.
It was like, yeah, it was just like, you know, you're in the middle of the jungle, like literally no one around. And you're like, what are you doing with your life?
Yeah, how have you ended up in this position?
Yeah, like, got chased by more dogs, saw a snake. Like, everything was just like hard. Yeah. And yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think when the jungle section was, but also too, like my mind was just wasn't in it. Like somebody, we had a WhatsApp group for the racers and somebody said, you know, there's this notorious jungle section, which is supposed to be very, very difficult. I was like, more difficult than what we had already? Like what? And one of the women racing, Julie, she said there was two big dogs, like, you know, two big dogs at the start. She's like, I barked back at them. Nice. I barked back at them, you know, and I was like, oh God, the whole day I was thinking about those dogs, like, you know, at the start of this race, which was silly because when I, or the start of this jungle section, because when I got there, I, what did I see in the distance? Two dogs walking away, you know, like in the opposite direction of me. And I was just like, those were probably the dogs. And I had no reason to stress because I just wouldn't have run into them anyways. But I spent the whole day worrying about it, you know, like my mind was just so, yeah, in such a bad place. But still, somebody was like, keep going, you know, like just keep going, just see. Well,
it sounds like at some point, the keep going was overpowered by the, I don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah. I mean, what had happened was the last kind of full day that I had racing, the day before, I hit a low point. I found myself crying in a 7-Eleven in the cat food aisle, like all over Instagram. I was like, don't turn off my tracker. Don't turn off that tracker. I'm going to finish this race, you know? And then like,
why was it in the cat food aisle?
I was just, that's where I was standing.
This is where you ended up.
Yeah.
She doesn't go in the dog food aisle.
I was going to say, it's for the dog, so you can just throw off the bike because you're cycling. Wait, eat the cat.
I know,
food.
I should have bought some in like case I didn't see any more. But I remember like, I was just like a 7-Eleven. It was after I had crossed over, you know, so if anyone knows Taiwan, like at the bottom, there's a road that crosses from one side to the other. And that road was one of the scariest roads I've ever cycled on. It was so funny because they had like bicycles painted like there was supposed to be like a lane or something. I'm like, this is not a lane. And like these big huge buses, like these big tourist buses, were coming so close to me, and I was like, I'm gonna end up in that ditch, you know, like I'm gonna die. I had to stop like 3 or 4 times because I was just so afraid. And I finally, right as I was kind of reaching the top of this climb, it was a climb the whole way to this road, you know, but it kept going down. So like, I'd always look to what the highest elevation is. And I was looking at my, you know, bike computer thinking I need to get to that elevation. Then you go up and then you go down and go down and you're like, no, I need to get to the top. You know, like it was just keep getting like more meters and you're like, not less. So then I knew I was reaching the top. I could see it. And I was just like, oh, this is like the worst day. And then this motorcyclist passed me and he like raised his like fist in solidarity to me, like, keep going. And I was like, yeah. And I was like, that was so nice.
Yes. I would have started crying. And, oh my God, that's amazing.
I did. I'm even crying. Like, I'm tearing up thinking about it now because I was in such a like bad way mentally, you know. And then, yeah, as soon as I started to reach the peak, tears were welling up. I was like, he was so nice to me. He doesn't even know me, you know, like, and like, I cried. That descent was so long and I cried the whole way. Like, I was passing those buses that were, because I'm pretty confident, like, descending on the bike. So I was like passing these buses, I was like, tears were just like, woo, you know, like, white, because the wind is like on my face. Yeah, I know. I was just like, and then I ended up at a 7-Eleven to kind of charge some of my my bike computer or lights or whatever. And that's where I was crying in the cat food aisle, saying to people on Instagram, like I was doing an Instagram story saying like, I'm going to finish this. I'm going to make it to checkpoint 2 and I'm going to try my best. And I didn't even know I was in the cat food aisle. And someone messaged, she's like, why are you in the cat food aisle? And I was like, I don't know. I don't know. So yeah, that was kind of the night before the big failure. And then the next day, like, what had happened was I started the day knowing that I would have missed the cutoff point for checkpoint 2. And I was okay with that. And again, I was like, don't turn off my tracker, Axel. You know, I was just like, I was like, I'm going to finish this, blah. But I just knew I wasn't going to make the cutoff officially. So if I did finish, I'd be like, you know, non-classified finisher, whatever. I don't care. Like, if you finish, you finish, right? So like, to me, what I don't get a t-shirt. Okay, cool. You know, so I was like, I'm going to finish it. But then I had, I don't know how long it was, like maybe 200 kilometers to go up the coast. And it was just headwind the whole day. Like,
had to be, didn't it?
Yeah, it was. It was just like, you know, really challenging. It's a beautiful coastline, like that, you know, what is it? East coast of Taiwan. Like, it's beautiful. It was stunning. But just...
But I'm guessing every part of your body at this point was in incredible pain too, right?
Yeah,
it was. Putting the mental aside.
Yeah, it was. I was in a lot of pain for this race. I think the bike fit was a bit off. Like, everything, nothing, you know, nothing came together the way it should for this race. So I was cycling and I was just like trying to distract myself with like podcasts and things like that. Normally I don't listen to kind of anything where I have to think on a race. Like, I just like music, because if I do listen to anything, because it's a bit mindless, like I don't have to put any effort into comprehending what's being said. And I was trying to listen to podcasts because I was just trying to distract myself from my own thoughts, because they were pretty negative. And then about 70 kilometers, or was it 70 or like 50 kilometers? It seemed like it was very close, but of course it wasn't close because headwind. I stopped at this like beauty point, you know, which is kind of like this beautiful vantage point looking, you know, the buses there or whatever. And I met these two tourists from like mainland China, and we were trying to like communicate, you know, without me not understanding Mandarin, them not understanding English. But then, you know, they were like getting a photo with me. I showed them the map, like of what I was doing. And then they were like, oh, wow. And they were trying to ask stuff about the bike. Then one of them gave me like a bag full of oranges, which is a really nice gesture. But I'm like, I don't need more weight on this bike. You know, I feel really heavy. Yeah. I feel like a dead weight. But it was super kind of him. So I ate a couple of oranges there and stuff. But yeah, I just carried on. And I said after that moment, like, I just started crying again, thinking like, I'm not going to finish this. I think I'm going to get to checkpoint 2 and then see how I feel. But I'm pretty sure I'm not going to finish the race. So I kind of decided at that point that it just wasn't feasible. And it wasn't feasible, not because mentally, I just physically could not, like, I don't think I would have physically been able to withstand the conditions of the last climb, which was a monster climb, the Taroko, going up Mount Taroko, and to make my flight. So
at this point you were, what, 800 or 900 miles into a 1200 mile race?
Yeah. So when I finally reached checkpoint 2, I rocked up and there was a guy sitting there and I was like, is anyone here from the cycling thing? And he's like, no, what's that? You know, he's just this like really nice man, Thomas, who I got chatting with a little later. But checkpoint 2 was 855 kilometers. So I that's when I scratched. Like, I didn't scratch that night. I don't think I did. I can't remember. And I just remember, because one of the rules of ultra cycling is never scratch at night, you know, because...
Aye.
Yeah, because once you have a sleep and maybe some food, you might feel differently. So I didn't officially scratch until the next morning when I woke up, and I was just like, oh God, I love bed. I love, like, you know, it just felt right to stop, you know, it felt like it was the right thing to do for me at the time. And I was a bit like, the day before I was very like emotional about it, but I was quite, I guess, a bit reflective, you know, the morning that I did quit. And, you know, I looked back kind of at the year as a whole, and, you know, the two races that I'd done earlier, I loved, you know, I loved those and I was successful in that. And, you know, I kind of was reasoning it in my, like, you know, rationalizing this failure. And I was just like, well, if you always succeed, are you really pushing your limits? Are you really trying, you know, like to do the impossible? And, you know, yeah, I mean, I found my limit there, you know, but I wasn't sad that I tried, you know, I was quite happy that I tried, and I'm quite grateful for that experience, as hard as it was. But, you know, and again, looking back at kind of the data from the ride, I did 855 kilometers and I forget how many meters of climbing, but it was a lot. And it was the best time I had ever done for that distance. You know, it was, so that was, to me, was a win. You know, it was, I didn't finish the race, but I was proud of that. I was proud of that effort. And yeah. So yeah, that's my big failure.
That's incredible. That's just such a great story. So you're talking about pride and lack of regret and the necessity of failure to make sure you're actually succeeding at something. Is that how you felt the day after you DNF'd?
Yeah. I mean, I kind of went back, like, I had a bit of a journey back then. So you need to find your own way back to, you know, the start line and stuff. So the next day was like, went into town because the checkpoint was like on the edge of town. And sorry, I just need to say this because like Axel, if he's listening, he knows I wrote something not so nice, but it was kind of funny in the book, like the race book to Axel, because Axel loves making these races difficult. And he had put like the right before I reached checkpoint, I was going through this like cemetery at midnight like it was dark. It was, I don't know if it was midnight because I think it got dark early, but it was like super dark. And I was going through the cemetery and there was like a military base next door. So these like sonic like booms of aircrafts, like, you know, taking off or landing or whatever. And it was so creepy. I was like, Axel, I was like, what's he doing? So I didn't like, so we're a bit out of town. So long story short, we slide, you know, I go back into town and just try to get back to, oh God, what's the capital of Taiwan? Taipei. Sorry, escaped me for a second. So I try to go back to Taipei. So it was just a bit of an effort the next day. So I was kind of like not really thinking about it too much. Like it was just like, you know, just stuff I had to get done. I felt, yeah, just fragile about it all. Like just kind of like, But I mean, the great thing about these races are that, you know, it's the ultra cycling community is really amazing. Like they're so kind and helpful and open and welcoming that no one looks at a DNF as like a failure. You know what I mean? Like some of the best ultra cyclists in the world have DNF'd, right? Like have not finished races. It's all about the experience and, you know, the stories and, you know, kind of tales from the road. So I knew I was going back to a really, you know, welcoming group of people who were very kind and understanding about things. And a lot of people didn't finish that race. Like a lot of really amazing cyclists, for whatever reason, didn't finish. There's a host of reasons why one wouldn't finish one of these. And luck has a lot to do with it, you know, like sometimes it's bad conditions, sometimes mechanical issues with your bike, sometimes your body just doesn't cooperate, like saddle sores or, you know, a real thing. So yeah, I was going back to like a group of people who I knew would be nice and understanding and kind towards me. So it wasn't such a, you know, bitter pill to swallow. And I mean, if anyone else, you know, I wrote this post, like I was thinking about it when at breakfast that morning and wrote this post about, yeah, like just saying that, are you really pushing boundaries if you don't fail every now and again, you know? And just the comments that people were writing were so like kind, you know, my friends, and it was just like really, really touching. So I'm probably the hardest on myself, you know, than anyone else. So it was just me kind of having to come to terms myself with what had happened. It wasn't, you know, didn't have to do with anyone else.
Mm. Dawn, you should be immensely proud of yourself as well.
Yeah, no, I mean, I am. I mean, it has some great stories.
Exactly. You wouldn't have those stories if you hadn't have just got yourself to that line and even had the first person at the first race when you turned up to encourage you, just start pedaling and see what happens, to even get to that point where you've been chased by dogs and you've nearly been run off the road by buses and, you know, you're fearing for your life. But all those kind of adventures that you had, it's just something to be proud of. And I think there's something about sport as well and the support you get within communities. It's like nothing else.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it was like, these races, what I love more, like, what I love most about them are the experiences you have on the road, you know, like that guy, you know, raising his fist and like saying, you got this, you go. And like, I've had that in other races too. People just being so like the guy giving me the bag of oranges, even though I was like, oh, these are so heavy, you know, like crying, eating oranges. But like the kindness of people, of strangers, you know, people who have nothing to do with you, don't know you, rallying behind you when they see you put yourself forward for something, you know, is just unbelievable. So I just love these races because they're just, never in my life have I had these types of experiences, you know, at ever, like as I do on these races. And you don't know what will happen, you know, it's really like on the start line, you know, you're kind of like, anything could happen on this race, you know, anything. It could be really, really good. It could be really, really bad. You could get good and bad, but it's just all part of it. You know, it's just part of the experience. And yeah, I love them. I just, they're such great adventures.
Don, when the one thing that got me to run my first marathon was one of my friends told me that, and he said it very, in a very almost like philosophical manner, he said, it will be a life-changing experience. And I never understood that until you do it and you realize that all of these races, yeah, they're physically demanding, but they take you emotionally to a place that is very, very hard to go to on a day-to-day basis or in anything else in life.
Yeah.
Because it's that struggle that you felt at mile 800, 900 that has now made you appreciate some of the other struggles, I mean, we all face in our lives.
Yeah. Yeah. No, anytime you put yourself up for something that you're really like extremely afraid to do, I almost find that's where, you know, I don't want to be so trite to say, you know, your comfort zone, you know, that like kind of circle, this is your comfort zone. And, you know, this is where the magic happens. But like, the more I've put myself out there, you know, to try something, the more I've grown from it, but I've got so many returns, like in terms of, you know, new friends, new people, new connections, new experiences. Just like, yeah, your life is just so much more enriching when you step into the unknown and try something that you could possibly fail at, you know, and you probably will at some point fail at. But
I when you said that fist bump moment going down the hill, I got goosebumps because I remembered, I think I may have talked about this before, but I did a run called The Beast, and it was along the Dorset coast, running up a wall as well, like you cycled up mountains, and I was done in. I wasn't properly prepared for it, but I wanted to do it, and I'm glad I did. And it was some of the nicest scenery I've ever seen, running route as well. But there was a moment where I didn't think I was going to finish, and I was just ready to start walking and think, you know, this is probably it now. I'm waiting to just stop. And it was getting closer to the finish. And I thought, well, I've got this far. Let's just keep pushing, even though it's painful. And I looked in the distance and there was this little road with trees the other end. And then these small buildings, like small houses on the side of the road. And I saw in the distance, this kind of figure kind of hobble out in the road, set a table up, disappear again, and I was running a bit closer, and then he'd come out again and he put something on the table, and then he looked over at some of the runners coming past, and it wasn't many of us, it was only me and a few others, and then he just turned the radio up and it started blasting out, and I was like, oh my God. It was Chariots of Fire, this little old man. He must have been about 80-90, and as he walked past, he just winked, and I just started bursting out crying. I was like, oh my God, it's so nice. It was so like motivational, just down, the Chariots of Fire music was kicking up. And it was just like such a nice thing to do, to give up his time to kind of play this music as people went past. And I'll never forget that.
Yeah, people, like, I mean, that's so funny because like that motorcyclist, like he probably didn't think anything of that. You know what I mean? Like he just saw like, oh, look, she looks like she's suffering, you know? Like maybe he's a cyclist, I don't know, you know, but that was probably a moment. And but that really resonated with me, you know, like that stayed with me, and it will, like, it's just, yeah, I guess people don't realize like how powerful a kind word or gesture or
a smile,
yeah, a smile, like, you know, same in Oman, I had a bunch of schoolgirls in a bus like wave at me and I burst into tears. Like, just because it's just so, yeah, it's just so motivating and nice to see that, you know, even if they think like you're a crazy person, what's this crazy person doing, like that you've had some kind of effect on them, and then they've had a, yeah, they've had a big effect on you as well.
It's that ripple effect, isn't it?
Yeah. Even like with Dan and Chris, you know, kind of encouraging me to do these through moments of self-doubt, like, you know, I've said to them after, that's really like, you know, if Chris hadn't told me I could do an ultra race, I don't know if I would have done one, you know, like, I just don't know. But Chris knew, Chris had done one, and Chris thought I could, so I could. Like, it really kind of helped, you know.
Taking that all into consideration, I'm just picturing something now. Having the way you've just told that story, I was just like leaning into the screen, just like amazed by everything you're saying, and just so many lessons come from it as well. As someone in communications, if you were to put one message on a billboard that described the experience that you went on to try and communicate a message to someone to just start, what would it be?
I feel like this is a bit deja vu. Like, someone's asked me this recently and I didn't know what to say, but I have on my Instagram bio, just it's an inside joke between me and two friends, John and Michelle, if you're listening, you know where this comes from, but do something. Like, just do something, just try, you know, just do something, whatever it is you want to do, just do it. Do something. Like, I think the worst place to be is like still, you know, like, I mean, look, and I say stillness, like, everybody needs rest, you know, it's stillness is nice, you know, but like, not moving forward though, you know, not doing things that you want to do, you know, I think, like, just do something, do whatever it is you want to do, try it, like, go for it, make steps to go there, you know, all of our lives are like a series of little decisions, you know, that we make day in, day out, and sometimes big decisions, but those big decisions are informed by the little decisions, right? So just, yeah, take a step towards whatever it is you want to do, even if it seems like completely impossible, just try it, do it, do something.
And just acting as opposed to thinking about it is going to do so much. Like, yeah. My philosophy on a lot of things is have a bias for action. We think about a lot of things, but we don't act on it. And like you said, what you do may suck initially. I'm sure both of our podcasts, respective podcast episodes, weren't great the first time around, but we did it, and we did it, and we did it, and eventually it was great.
Yeah. Well, Adnan, our podcasts are good, we thought. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, speak for yourself.
Yeah, I like all of our podcast episodes. They're all amazing. Yeah. No, but like, yeah, I mean, I'm not afraid to look like an idiot, you know, like, I'm really not. I'm like, I remember the first time, like, I was out cycling in El Cudra, like on a rental bike that's too small for me, you know, amongst those big groups of those big pelotons of really looking, you know, professional looking like cyclists. I'm not afraid to look like a fool, you know, and that's the price for trying something, you know. I'm learning to wake surf now, and I love it. Yeah. And the first few times I did it, I was terrible. You know, like, I thought I was terrible for my own standards. Like, well, it wasn't bad, but you just get better and better. Like, you know, very rarely will you start something and be amazing at it. You know, like, it's just, you just have to get over that fear of, I don't know, maybe, I mean, nobody else will think you're an idiot, or maybe those cycling groups in El Cudja did think I look like an idiot, but that's fine. Like, I don't care, you know? And, yeah, you just kind of, yeah, just just don't worry about what anyone else is thinking. You only have to, you know, you only have to live with yourself, right? Like, you don't have to care about what other people think about you.
Do you know what? I'm going to take that advice now, Dawn, as well, because this is official, Adnan. I've not spoken to you about this yet, but my boys, we're going to get them a skateboard each for Christmas that's coming up. And we're going to get them lessons as well. And I've always thought, so when I took Etty to rugby, mm-hmm. we used to go to the Hurricanes. The first year I was a sideline dad just watching. Then I thought, why am I watching? Why don't I get involved? So I volunteered the second year. And then I become a qualified rugby coach so I could coach and be involved with Etty as well. Absolutely loved it. Best thing I've ever done. So now I'm thinking of skateboarding. I'm going to get myself a skateboard. And I used to skateboard years ago as a kid. But I think when you get past that kind of, oh, I don't want to fall over, I don't want to get injured and then not be able to work. I've got to the point now where I'm just thinking, like you said, it's in my mind and I want to be involved and do it with the kids. So I'm going to take up skateboarding. I'm going to buy a skateboard. But I'm afraid of, that 38-year-old man. Like, what's he doing? Skateboarding down the beach or skateboarding to the shop with a dog. But I don't care.
Yeah, who cares? Like, I mean, nobody will criticize you who, like, no skateboarders will criticize you. They'll be like, oh, cool. Like, that guy's trying skateboarding, you know? Like, it's people who don't try things are critical. They're the critical people, you know? Like, they're sinning, whatever. And I've seen this with business, too. Like, people... It's always so easy to say, oh, this has been run improperly or this isn't mismanaged or whatever, but you're not in that seat, right? You're not in that seat of that person. You're not in that person's, you know, life. So the only people criticize you, I think are people who are doing less than you. And I that's stolen from somewhere that I heard, but I absolutely believe it.
Is that a similar message that you tell brands when you work with them in communications as well with Be Collective? So you've worked with some big brands in Dubai, like huge brands. Is that the kind of message you tell them as well, just to be bold and just do something that's out of your comfort zone or do something new that's going to get you noticed?
I think the nature of my clients, like, you know, in the sports arena, everybody is pretty bold. So I've been really, really fortunate. I actually say, like, work kind of led me to this because I was surrounded by messaging of, like, just do it and, you know, defy your limits and stuff like that. That's all I absorbed, you know, for like 5-6 years was like messages about, you know, jumping off the deep end and trying, you know, like just going
quite
for
literally.
It. Yeah, literally defy your limits. Just do it. You know, Nike was a client, my old agency, X Dubai was a client for the past six.
Deep Dive as well.
Deep Dive Dubai as well.
Yeah. Quite literally just dive in.
Dive in.
Just go for it. Yeah.
Dive in. So, I mean, those clients, it's really, you know, there was a real synergy between me and the clients and which led to some fantastic work and fantastic campaigns and stuff. So not necessarily with that, but yeah, there's some clients like, you know, I've had so many good campaign ideas that require a little bravery, you know, from clients. And sometimes like those are the ones that hurt, the ones that aren't realized, you know. You're like, oh, this would be amazing if we just went for it, you know, and they're like, oh no, it's a bit risky, and you're like, oh. You know, and there's been, I'm fortunate, like, and I'm just not saying this, but I haven't had many, you know, in the past 6 years, many dud campaigns that I've done, thankfully, because and I don't know, I've been doing it a long time. But you know, sometimes the clients that, you know, maybe aren't that bold to begin with and you bring them a bold idea, though, it always works out. It always like, you know, it always is like ends up being a bit magic. Right. And yeah, I love those. But yeah, I've been really fortunate, though, to have clients who just have that mindset in any case, you know, by their very nature are bold brands and full of bold people who have achieved amazing things. So yeah, I've been so fortunate to just be exposed to that world. And that's part of it's led to, you know, me setting up the podcast as well, because just working with these people and seeing these stories and not having, you know, feeling like there was nowhere to pitch the story to media because the media didn't fully understand it, or it's not a sport in the traditional sense, you know? So yeah, it's kind of all led, you know, all roads kind of led to ultra cycling in the medal set.
Mm-hmm. I love it.
Wow. That's such a great like story and journey from what you did to how it relates to now what you do today.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all kind of intertwined, and yeah, I just feel like we were having the chat before the podcast, like so fortunate to be able to chat to these amazing athletes who take on big challenges and fail sometimes, you know, but more often than not, they succeed because they're trying. They're trying new things. So I just love, again, like surrounding myself by those messages, because it's, yeah. And you need a constant reminder. Like we were talking before the podcast, like you just need reminders. You believe these things sometimes, but it's easy because we're human. We have emotions and, you know, we're fallible. Like to just have those constant reminders is just such a privilege to have.
So one thing that you didn't mention that I want the listeners to be mindful of is how positive you are through this and how appreciative of you are of all the things you have. And I think that's such a key in going through some of the challenges we all go through, right? Like you said, you have the privilege to be working with these brands, the privilege is to do the hard thing and the privilege to fail as well.
Yeah. Like that's the thing, to be able to get to the start line, like, you know, was such a privilege. There's so many barriers for so many people, you know, whether it be financial or physical or whatever, you know, like to be that privileged to have the means and ability to do these races is amazing. You know, it's, I feel like, you know, and this is where I'm like, do something, like sometimes I'm like, I just want to do the most, you know, I just want to do the most, but I do need to realize like I need rest sometimes, you know, but, but I just think with whatever hand you're dealt in life, like you can, you know, take steps to, to do something, you know, to achieve certain things within the parameters that you have.
There's just so much wasted potential just left out there, isn't there, from so many people that just don't take the risk, don't start.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and sometimes like if you're like I said after, so I've got another race coming up. I don't know what's going to happen. I'm in a positive mind frame for this one anyways. Physically, I don't know if I'm going to be there, but it's early February, race around Rwanda. It's 1,000 kilometers, about 20,000 meters of climbing.
Wow.
30% gravel, 40% gravel, cycling. Super excited about it. But after that race, I'm just going to exist for a bit. You know, I'm just going to exist for a bit and not move on to something else right away, just to kind of, you know, focus on business and just enjoy small things as well, you know, because I feel like, yes, like achieve big things, you know, or try big things, what you don't need to achieve them, but try them at least, or try to do whatever it is you want to do, you know, like whatever you feel in your heart, you want to try and achieve as a goal, try it. But also too, like, you know, it's fine just to be. It's fine just to be. It's okay, you know. I feel like Dubai, like there's a lot of achievers. I think, you know, it attracts a certain type of person, this country, which is amazing. There's an amazing energy here. But sometimes I'm like, during the pandemic, for example, when everybody was like doing a marathon in their garden, I was like, just calm down, everyone.
Well, you know, which you also gotta keep Dubai is a place of perception too, right? So there's a lot of people that are doing and trying to, you know, achieve stuff, but there's a lot of people who are also showing that they're achieving stuff and may not always be, right? So that can get to you as well.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't compare myself to anyone, because if I did, I wouldn't do anything, you know, because even I go out to El Kudra now and I'm like a slow cyclist, you know, I don't ride in those pelotons at all and people pass me and like, you know, they're probably like, oh, she's terrible. And that's fine. You know,
just riding your own race.
Yeah, I'm just riding my own race. So yeah. But yeah, I think after a race around Rwanda, like I'm just gonna have a period of just existing. But just trying, like I wanna get better at wake surfing. You know, I wanna focus on the business a bit and not like be on a hamster wheel of training all the time. I wanna ride my bike for fun, not because I have to, because of a training, you know, it's in my training peaks kind of thing.
And that's important. I think if it's not fun, then yeah, it's a little different than I think.
Don, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on. Thank you for sharing what has been honestly the most engaging race story I've ever heard.
I haven't told anyone about my big failure in Taiwan, really. Like I was like, we're going to do, I think we're going to do something on our podcast about it at some point. Like, because yeah, it's important to talk about failure, you know, again, like if you're not failing, are you trying? You know, everyone, it's like inevitable, you know, like, is it inevitable? It's inevitable to fail at least some of the time.
No, I'm just very grateful, Dawn, that you've come on today and just shared that story with us. Cause like Anna said, I absolutely loved listening to it. And we went into that story quite quickly because I was conscious that there was a lot to talk about and I wanted you to just start talking about it straight away. But I'm so glad you did.
Yeah, no, thank you.
That podcast, that entire story could just be the podcast. Like I was thinking of just, you know, like as you were talking, I was thinking of a title of just being like the ultimate failure in Taiwan.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I haven't put a title on that experience with the race, but yeah, I don't even know. It's just a series of failures. But I will say, so those big climbs that we had, so I'm, you know, if you don't know me, I'm 6 foot tall. I'm not super slender, you know, I'm athletic build or whatever. So I'm not like, you know, in terms of cycling, like I'm carrying weight up. And there was another cyclist who, Georgie, who's an amazing cyclist, and she's, you know, she just floats up a hill, you know? So even though that was a failure, if anyone's familiar with Strava, I did get some comms on the race.
Some kudos, a little bit of kudos.
Well, some comms. I was like queen of the mountain, on segments.
Oh, some comms. Yeah.
Because like Georgie got them going up. And then I got them going down. I was like, I got this. Because I was like, physics is just taking me. So it's not, yeah, it wasn't a complete failure. I had a good, like, overall, I had an interesting time. I was chased by dogs. I met cool people. I got gifts on the road in the form of oranges. Yeah, I just kind of got to see all of Taiwan. Yeah. Got to see all of Taiwan and did the best race, like did the best ride I've ever done, like in terms of distance, you know, and time. So yeah, all wasn't lost.
It was an experience.
Yeah, it was an experience. I'm excited for the next one as well. I hope I don't fail mentally. Again, I'm going into it with a much better mindset, but like who knows, you know, it could, these races, anything can happen. Luck plays a big, you know, piece of it. Weather, you know, other conditions, your bike. Yeah, so we'll see.
Thanks for listening. Leave us a review. Tell us what you think. Find us at Instagram, bailforward.pod. If you know someone that wants to be on the show, or if you want to be on the show, give us a shout, DM us, and we'll see you soon.